The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. All across America and the world, we are. Here are some sounds from Paris from last night as thousands in a very hushed tone were singing Ave Maria outside the cathedral at Notre Dame. Wow. What an incredible moment, because I'm watching the video and you can see just the glow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep thinking about the symbolism of watching it here on Easter week. Mm-hmm. There's a picture that I have of, you know, after, you know, when Christ rises from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a glow coming from the tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this picture that I have, and I've used it before actually on my personal Facebook page around Easter, and you see that, and I'm telling you, the symbolism is just,
yeah,
to me, that's when I'm looking at this picture, that's what I'm thinking of at that moment, and my hair's just standing up when I hear that and look at it, because it was from last night when it was, again, it's day now in Paris, but from last night when it was getting dark, and it was just the glow. But
right.
As we know, apparently the basic structure is still intact, and the artifacts are,
yep,
apparently are safe.
The fire is fully extinguished in the last hour. The firefighters are there. By the way, about 400 firefighters working on this. If you look at this cathedral, the history of it, more than 850 years old, took 182 years to build, can accommodate more than 6,000 parishioners, and has been the focus of roughly 13 million visitors every single year, 400 firefighters working to extinguish this blaze, which took many hours to do, and they finally got it under control, fully extinguished now, they're reporting. And they're saying that the structure itself is intact. Obviously, there's going to be a great deal of work, but they have to also look at what parts of the structure might be compromised, and go from there, because you're gonna build it, you know, basically all over again, the very top of this cathedral, which had extensive work done after the French Revolution, and was going through, in fact, some maintenance and renovations at the time. They're not sure if that has anything to do with the cause of the blaze or not. They have started the investigation process officially overnight here in the States, but this happened a couple hours ago, where they started interviewing some of the construction workers there at the cathedral and asking them about, I guess, what they noticed right before the fire began. But pretty humbling experience when you see the videos now, raw videos coming across from international media, showing the people there in Paris showing up to sing Ave Maria, and there were a couple of other hymns that they sang. This being Holy Week, the symbolism certainly does not escape you.
No, it just it's spiritual and haunting and just a range of emotions. And I was just amazed how how focused so many Americans were. I mean, this thing just on social media, it just went, boom, and it was spirituality. It was a sense of the history of the world. It was a sense of the history of Western civilization and how important the history is, and how the symbolism of that history is in places like the cathedral at Notre Dame, and everything that has gone on in France, two world wars, a French Revolution, everything else that has gone on over the last 800 years, yet it has survived in this magnificent form, which really affects people. And it's and I was just found it an amazing moment. You know, sometimes out of destruction comes some of the most amazing moments of human beings. And what you see when you really get down to the core of what of people's souls. And I think I saw a lot of that on, you know, we say social media can be terrible. Social media was great yesterday when this was all going on. It really was.
Well, because, you know, what really binds us? It is faith. What really binds us, especially for Christians this week, it is faith. Many there is for my family and countless others around the world. Holy Week is for me, it's one of those somber weeks where you kind of review your life. I know a lot of people do that at the end of the year, but really Easter week, Holy Week, is that week for me. And the question always is, it starts and ends with, what have you done for others lately? What have you done to reach out for to other people and to help other people? And when you saw an international community coming together really in support, in spirit, in prayer, during the coverage of this blaze, I don't know that there is any stronger statement for faith with that kind of unity.
I know he was criticized, and when I saw his first post, I went, oh, he's going to get blasted for this. And it was our colleague Ben Shapiro who posted about, you know, that this is about the symbolism and history of, you know, Judean Christian influence and morals and values in our society that has brought us to today. It's absolutely true.
It is.
It's what it is, and all the struggles to get us to where we are today, and the values that we have today, and the fact that we're standing and being in France, you know, after the especially recent history going back over the, you know, the last 100 years. And World War One and World War Two, and what they went through, and what freedom and democracy. By the way, the Constitutional Republic under the umbrella of a general democracy. I'm not talking direct democracy. You don't need to nitpick me right now on this. But it does. You there's a huge symbolism, I think, for many people. And especially the fact that it exists in France, and part of it's World War II, part of it's Nazism, part of it is Europe in general, and the fear of Soviet expansion. It all gets into the, you know, morality, because when we talk about Judeo-Christian values, we are talking about the Western civilization and what the basis of it all was, which is the basis of the Constitution of the United States, which protects all religious freedom. And so when you look at it, it was a huge moment that because it was a fire, just an occurrence that happened. It wasn't any type of from what we know, violent act, vandalism, terrorism, or anything like that. But since what we've been told, it just was a fire, completely unexpected, came from left field, and within that hour of people hearing it happening. There was just sort of a reverence that existed all throughout social media worldwide that I thought was just wonderful.
Yeah, right. And I would say that even there were some maybe that you wouldn't expect to see to chime in. I guess I'll put it mildly. but the respect for the faith was there in their comments about it. And I thought that tells you how big this event is.
Well, but it also, I think, shows you that people have certain levels that you, when you really get down to it, look, you know, we've talked about this before when we got into politics, and the fact that one of the things that was brought up is that, you know, religion has gone down in France, for example. But still, it's something huge. We've often said this when it comes to politics. A lot of times we have human idols because there is this wanting for spirituality that exists in human beings. And sometimes when you get down to the level of this, I think it does sort of re-energize in people the sense of history and spirituality. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. What you saw yesterday was the way people responded was a good thing. And in all human, you know, tragedies that happen, and you can look at this as a terrible tragedy, but it was a fire. But when you see what that brought out in people worldwide, you can look at it and say it was a good point, because anything can really be rebuilt. No, some things you can't. You know, some things you do lose. You lose the history of it, but it looks like they're going to be able to rebuild it. The core of it still remains. The artifacts are still there. But it's the fact of what's in the human heart and soul really is what drives everything. It drives societies. It drives countries. It drives political parties. And what I think, for the most part, we saw yesterday, again, humans are always flawed, so you can always, somebody's going to find, well, I saw this one person do this. But for the most part, 99% of what I saw yesterday was completely positive and does give you hope. It really does. It does. Yeah. It does give you, you know, maybe, well, I won't go this far. I'm going to say maybe we're not doomed.
Oh, no, we're doomed.
But it, so, like I said, it was a absolutely tragic but fascinating day yesterday because of the fire at the cathedral at Notre Dame. So just wanted to play that audio of the people singing Ave Maria, because that was just a very, very special moment.
All right,
if you want to get in, lines open. So much still to talk about here before we get out of here for today. The Mueller report will be released on Thursday, and then we get back to the normal screaming, hating human beings.
Right.
And more coming up. There was a blog. I got to read portions of a blog that I've been saving for like 2 or 3 days now, and I'm like, this is a perfect moment to read. You know, we were talking about Ocasio-Cortez. Earlier in the show, we're talking about Bernie Sanders. You know, the Ocasio-Cortez came out and said, you know, that the Americans today, you know, the people that she's around have never tasted American prosperity. Mm-hmm. And there's an op-ed piece that was written by a millennial that said, what?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? So, and I thought I'd read some paragraphs off of it because it's just awesome. That coming up, plus more audio, your calls and comments to 866-90-RED-EYE.
Is your after-treatment system trying to tell you something? Pay attention to the warning lights on your dashboard today in order to save later on. The malfunctioned indicator lamp and the check engine light are telltale signs that there could be an after-treatment system issue present. These symbols appear on the dashboard of most vehicles as an image or outline of an engine, illuminated with a yellow glow and sometimes with the word check beneath or inside the image. Your truck's engine will begin to reduce its power output if these lights appear on your dash. The check engine light can initiate a 20% derate, which then increases to 40%. If these lights appear on your dash, you should find a nearby service provider immediately. Call 1-800-824-SHOP for roadside assistance, or stop by a TA truck service near you to learn more about our full scope of after-treatment services.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-824-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Michael in Knoxville, Tennessee. Michael, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say that when I got up for the day and saw the news, I felt like Obi-Wan when Alderaan blew up. It was like there was a movement in the Force, like, oh my goodness, everything just went to crap, you know? It was a shock. But though I'm Christian, I'm not Catholic, but what hurts me the most is just seeing history destroyed of any sort.
Sure.
You know, when the Taliban was blowing up stuff in the Middle East, even though it wasn't Christian or anything like that, it was whatever they didn't agree with, they were destroying it. And it's like, do you realize that's like 1,000 years old, 1,500 years old? That's part of history that you just blew the heck out of.
Yeah.
I hate seeing history destroyed.
Yeah. And thank you for the call and the thoughts, Michael. We appreciate it. Notre Dame construction began in 1163. I mean, took 182 years. These days we're saying, I hired a contractor to redo my kitchen. He can't do it in 2 hours. You know, we're always complaining that things need to be done when, and no technology, pure manpower, pure hands, pure human brain and brawn, really, to build this majestic cathedral.
Michael made a great point when he said, you know, look, I'm Christian but not Catholic. He said, but I hate to see anything in history being destroyed, which was part of the argument, remember, with the, you know, the Confederate monuments.
Right, yeah.
Look, not saying I supported the Confederates, but these are monuments. These are things that have been put up. They've stood for years. It makes people remember. People don't go and celebrate around them. Nobody's celebrating and cheering. What they're doing is looking and then learning about history.
Right.
And that's what you do. And, you know, it's the same thing. Imagine if somebody started blowing up the pyramids or if there was some destruction of our earthquake of the pyramid. People would feel terribly sad. People want the symbols of history because the symbols, by the way, the symbols make us inquisitive about what came before me.
Right.
What happened before me? Who built these things? What were they about? What were they doing? And so it's important to have all these symbols of our history all over the world.
I'm really hoping, and I'm guessing there will be, there may be more than one film company that will document the rebuilding effort. Because you think about the craftsmanship and how do you restore something like that? Where do you begin? How many people does it require in order to do it?
Did you ever see the documentary of the rebuilding of the World Trade Center?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
I think it's, did Spike Lee do it?
Was it Spike Lee? Yeah.
I think it was. Mm. Yeah. It's tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, you think about these, you know, very symbolic, but in the case of the Notre Dame Cathedral, yeah. 850 plus years you're talking about.
Well, they'd actually, if they do it like they did the World Trade Center, they talk to the construction workers.
Yeah.
They talk to everybody who was involved in redoing it, from the people actually putting it together and every craft of person that was involved in, of trade, putting it together.
Right.
So,
right.
That would be unbelievable to see a documentary over the next 10 years on the rebuilding of Notre Dame.
You could easily make that an ongoing series. I would watch every single week, you know, because there's so much, I think, in the planning, in the making sure that you have the right minds. It won't be just France. It's going to be an international community that's rebuilding this cathedral. And it will be pretty awesome to witness, I believe.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Eric, I just want to read a few paragraphs from this because this really relates to everything going on today. It was from this website called Alpha News, Thoughts from a Hipster Coffee Shop. And it was this young woman by the name of Alyssa Algren wrote it a couple of weeks ago. It says, I'm sitting here in a small coffee shop trying to think of what to write about. I scroll through my newsfeed on my phone looking at the latest headlines of Democratic candidates calling for policies to fix the so-called injustices of capitalism. I put my phone down and continue to look around. I see people talking freely, working on their MacBooks, ordering food they get in an instant, seeing cars go by outside, and it dawned on me, we live in the most privileged time in the most prosperous nation, and we've become completely blind to it. Vehicles, food, technology, freedom to associate with whom we choose, these things are so ingrained in our American way of life, we don't give them a second thought. We are so well off here in the United States that our poverty line begins 31 times above the global average. 31 times. Virtually no one in the United States is considered poor by global standards. Yet in a time where we can order a product off Amazon with one click and have it at our doorstep the next day. Oh, that's even antiquated. We are unappreciative, unsatisfied, and ungrateful. Our unappreciation is evident as the popularity of socialist policies among my generation continues to grow. Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently said to Newsweek, talking about the millennial generation, quote, an entire generation, which is now becoming one of the largest electorates in America, came of age and never saw American prosperity, end of quote. Never saw American prosperity. Let that sink in. When I first read that statement, I thought to myself, that was quite literally the most entitled and factually illiterate thing I have ever heard in my 26 years on this earth. Now, I'm not attributing Ms. Ocasio-Cortez's words to outright dishonesty. I do think she wholeheartedly believes the words she said to be true. Many young people agree with her, which is entirely misguided. My generation is being indoctrinated by a mainstream narrative to actually believe we have never seen prosperity. I know this firsthand. I went to college. Let's just say I didn't have the popular opinion, but I digress. Let me lay down some universal truths really quick. The United States has lifted more people out of abject poverty, spread more freedom and democracy, and has created more innovation in technology and medicine than any other nation in human history. Not only that, but our citizenry continuously breaks world records with charitable donations. The rags-to-riches story is not only possible in America, but not uncommon. We have the strongest purchasing power on earth, and we encompass 25% of the world's GDP. The list goes on. However, these universal truths don't matter. We are told that income equality is an existential crisis, even though this is not an indicator of prosperity. Some of the poorest nations in the world have a low income inequality. We are told that we are oppressed by capitalism, even though it's brought about more freedom and wealth to the more people than any other system in world history. We are told that the only way we will acquire the benefits of true prosperity is through socialism and the centralization of federal power, even though history has proven time and time again this only brings tyranny and suffering. Why then? With all the overwhelming evidence around us, evidence that I can see sitting at a coffee shop, do we not view this as prosperity? We have people who are dying to get into our country, people around the world destitute and truly impoverished, yet we have a young generation convinced they have never seen prosperity. And as a result, elect politicians dead set on taking steps towards abolishing capitalism. Why? The answer is this. My generation has only seen prosperity. We have no contrast. We didn't live in the Great Depression or live through two world wars or see the rise and fall of socialism and communism. We don't know what it's like not to live without the internet, without cars, without smartphones. We don't have a lack of prosperity problems. We have an entitlement problem, an ungratefulness problem, and it's spreading like a plague. With the current political climate giving rise to the misguided idea of a socialist utopia, will we see the light or will we have to lose it all to realize that what we have is now true prosperity? Destroying the free market will undo what millions of people had died to achieve. My generation is becoming the largest voting bloc in the country. We have an opportunity to continue to propel us forward with the gifts capitalism and democracy has given us. The other option is that we can fall into the trap of entitlement and relapse into restrictive socialist destitution. The choice doesn't seem too hard, does it? I wanted to read that because I know taking time to read something that long sometimes is just the wrong thing to do, but I thought it was the right thing to do in that particular case because it comes from a young woman, 26 years of age, looking around saying, Ocasio-Cortez says that none of us, and she's 26, Ocasio-Cortez is what, 29, we've a generation that's never seen prosperity. We talked about it when Ocasio-Cortez said that and said, how delusional do you have to be? How absolutely delusional do you have to be of the history of the world to say something like that? It's good to see it coming from a 26-year-old woman.
Well, and it's funny because I remember having a conversation one time with a couple with two of my adult children, and I said, you know, I think that there's a difference in generationally, but specifically with you, my children. And of course, their grandparents, my parents, and me even. And I said, you would have different lessons if you had ever been poor. And they said, whoa, they kind of scoffed. Dad, we've been poor. I said, no, you've been broke. There's a difference. Broke is going without, payday's not until Saturday or Friday, and today's Wednesday. I'll pack my lunch for a couple of days. I'll stay home for a few days. Poor is I'm going to have to make a real change in my behavior to get out of the situation that I'm in now, to change it forever. And it's going to happen in a number of ways. Either I get experience in education or both, and I work twice as hard, twice as many hours, or three times as many hours if I need to. But you find the solution. You find your way out of the hole, and you don't sit there and wait for somebody to drop something in the hole you're in just to give you something. And you look at the innovation, the expansion of wealth that we have seen, what we have available to us in technology, communications, smartphones,
medicine,
and all of this that is available to us all the time, and yet certain people still can't find satisfaction. Well, the fact of the matter is they have all that should satisfy, support them in life, but they choose not to appreciate it. They make a choice not to see it. They make a choice to look away and complain about what they don't have because what? They see other people that may have more than they have. And it is that lack of appreciation. It's that lack of willingness to look at a situation and go, wow, I'm beyond blessed to be living in a day and age where I have all of this available to me, and I have good people around me, and I have opportunity ahead of me.
Well, I mean, that's the, you know, when we look at what we want in a society, and we've had this discussion, you know, many times on and off the air, and we said it, is there, late last week. When it comes down to it, people ask me, what's your general political, you know, what is your politics? Are you conservative or liberal? I said, you want to break it down to take politics out of it? I want to be left alone. That's all I really want. I want to be left alone. I don't want anybody in my business. I want to be able to do my, I want to be able to do what I want to do without anybody getting in my way. That's what I really want. I don't want to get in anybody else's way. I don't want them to get in my way. If you want my political philosophy, that's really, when you break it down to it, that's what I really want. I just want to be left alone to do the things that I wish to do. I want to be held accountable for the failures that I make. And I would, you know, like to be rewarded, would like to be, no guarantee, for the things that I do right. And if I work a certain place here and don't get rewarded, I'll move on to something else. But what I want really more than anything is freedom. You know, when the happiness quotient comes out, I've always said, well, my goal isn't happiness. What do you mean your goal isn't happiness? My goal is freedom. My goal is not happiness, because what's happiness? Happiness would be, to a lot of people, would be getting $1 million tomorrow. Somebody gives you $1 million, I'd be happy. Well, that's not what would make me happy. What would make me happy, what I know would make me happy, because I'm not looking at what would make me happy tomorrow. I want to look at what would make me happy my entire life. That would be freedom. Not things, but money. And that's ingrained into me. I know it's ingrained into you. It's ingrained into people that think like we think. It was ingrained to the founding fathers, who said, we will give up everything for freedom, including our life. That's how important freedom was. That's the core that, by the way, a ton of modern liberals have no idea. The founding fathers were a bunch of, no, don't you understand? They were willing to give up everything for what? For freedom. That's a, that, that basically, they were willing, they already had, the, you're talking about the founding fathers, those were the haves. The haves didn't say, look, we got it all made, and, you know, we're part of the haves, and we're doing great, and screw you. Yeah, we live in an oppressed society, but we're the ones that are benefiting better. They said, no, to hell with all the worldly possessions that we have. We want freedom, and we want everybody else to have freedom, too. That's what we want. We don't want people telling us what to do. We wish to be free. And when you think like that, I think you have a totally different opinion than anybody who is a liberal. They're not, they don't think that way. And they don't observe, you know, one of the jokes from anybody who grew up in the 60s and 70s was, you know, when I was young, we used to crawl across shag carpeting to change the channel of the TV. Mm-hmm. And the reason we do that is to show the absurdity of the fact that how blessed we were, but also looking back to our parents who would say, when I was young and they grew up in the Depression and had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically we're being sarcastic when we do that. But that's a joke. What she's saying is, no, today they actually believe that they're impoverished and they have everything.
Right. And they have every opportunity in front of them.
Yep.
Some of them actually even become lawmakers.
Exactly. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I thought great piece there, Thoughts from the Hipster Coffee Shop, about written by a millennial saying, wow, how can Ocasio-Cortez, 26-year-old woman, saying, how can she say an entire generation is now becoming one of the largest electorates in America, came of age and never saw American prosperity? So that's the most bizarre thing ever. When you think about it, that's what's driving the Democrat Party right now, is these young people saying, we have never had any type of prosperity in this country. We haven't seen it. That's actually the core. That's what they think.
Yeah, I think it's a slap in the face to the people who, you know, say what you will about the behaviors of a Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs or any of those individuals, but their technology that's come about has created how many different jobs? How many different sectors have benefited as a result of the existence of their technology? Well, how many? The retail sector alone has been booming and has also provided more buying power to young people. Many of those young people will take advantage of it. Some won't.
Well, I'd have to get a little bit deeper into this and say, well, then what does a young person want? Do they reject opportunity? Do they just want everything taken care of?
Right.
Do they believe that if everything is taken care of, they will live a happy life? No challenges.
Right.
No mountains to climb.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. We've been talking about throughout the morning, giving you the latest updates on the cathedral fire in Paris at Notre Dame. Here is a New York Cardinal, Timothy Dolan.
This Holy Week teaches us that, like Jesus, death brings life. Today's dying, we trust, will bring rising. It affects the soul because it's a house of prayer and faith. Boy, it affects the heart because it's a place of love and gathering and community.
Overnight, some good news is that the inner structure is intact. The artifacts, the Crown of Thorns, for example, are all safe, and
right.
They will rebuild and believe that they can do a good job at rebuilding it.
Right now, one family alone has pledged at least a couple $100 million now in the rebuilding efforts. In fact, officials there in Paris say that they'll be turning to the international community for more pledges and donations, which will likely happen. You're likely going to see a great deal of private sector money thrown this way, and they will be, as Macron was talking last evening here in the States several hours ago. Of course, they will be rebuilding, but they'll be reaching out to the international community and many nations to help rebuild this historic cathedral. 850-plus years old. Took 182 years to build this cathedral, and 13 million people a year visit.
Yeah, I saw that.
This it can accommodate over 6,000 people,
and they say on the average is 30,000 a day go through, and when you get to Holy Week, which this is Holy Week, 50,000.
Yeah,
wow,
just amazing.
It really, really is. In other news, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld has decided to run against Donald Trump as a Republican. In the 2020 election.
I'm announcing that I'm running for president of the United States as a Republican against President Trump in 2020. I really think if we have six more years of the same stuff we've had out of the White House the last 2 years, that would be a political tragedy, and I would fear for the Republic. So I would be ashamed of myself if I didn't raise my hand and run. You know, what we have now is a president who mocks the rule of law. I spent 7 years in the Justice Department trying to keep the politics out of law enforcement. He's trying to put it in. A president who says we don't need a free press, who says climate change is a complete hoax. He's not paying attention.
When did he say we don't need a free press?
I don't know. I don't believe he's ever said that. As we've said, when you're a Republican, when you claim that you're a Republican with integrity, and the first thing out of your mouth when you state that you're going to run against the incumbent is a lie.
That's a lie. And then you follow up with climate change. Man, you're in tune.
Well, not just climate change. The first thing that Trump wants to politicize law enforcement. Mm-hmm. If you ever, as you stated the start of the show out with Eric, if you ever wanted to have a poster child as a victim,
it's Donald Trump.
For law enforcement being political, it's Trump.
Yeah.
I mean,
wants to politicize law enforcement. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Were you talking about Trump or Obama?
Look, Bill.
Yeah.
You got to do a better job.
Wow.
Any candidate who runs, I don't know any candidate who's out there, Democrats, it's always easier, but Trump. If I wanted to run against Trump, which I believe would be a foolish endeavor to do.
If I'm looking to raise a bunch of money that will go to nothing.
if you want me to flush your money down the toilet.
let me rephrase that. If I'm looking to raise very little money that will go to nothing. There you go.
But you could. There's ideas of substance that you as a Republican and a conservative can attract Trump on.
Hmm. Right.
Certainly you can. He claims to be a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, and this is something that we had talked about in the past about Mr. Weld when he said he was a libertarian and said, but I believe that gay rights, gay marriage is a constitutional right. Then you're not a libertarian.
Mm.
You may believe it should be a right. Then you're not a libertarian. You can't claim both. You can't claim that government, you can't claim something that the Constitution doesn't claim. Because it's government recognition of marriage, which is the entire thing. It's not, as we've said, the government. When did it pass? What was it? What year did the Supreme Court?
In the summer of 2015.
Okay. In the summer of 2015, you could get married.
Mm-hmm.
Before the summer of 2015, you could get married. It's government recognition of a marriage, which is a licensing process, not a right. And again, the Supreme Court changed that, which is just ridiculous. But the fact is, you can't be a libertarian and claim that, as Bill Weld has done. So, I don't know. It just was a poor attempt yesterday. I'm like, really? This is it? You're starting out this way?
Yeah.
I'm going to lie the first two things and then say he doesn't know what he's talking about on climate change. Well, now that you brought up climate change as a Republican, you're a shoo-in, Trump. You might as well just give up.
Yeah, you might as well just throw in the towel. Wow. It's over.
It's over. There's a Republican for climate change. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. We already had Newt.
Right, exactly.
Newt already went down that. I didn't do this in the beginning of the show, and I just came upon it right now.
Okay.
In the news, the media's coverage of the fire at the cathedral at Notre Dame. You ready for this?
Yeah.
This is from CNN. Daniel Burke, CNN's religion editor. Okay, here we go. For other Catholics, it was difficult not to see several layers of symbolism in the flames. The fire broke out during Holy Week, the most sacred time on the Christian calendar, at a time when the Catholic Church worldwide is engulfed in a controversy over the abuse of children, and when France has seen months of public anger over rising fuel prices.
I'm sorry, what is fuel?
Fuel prices. they were thinking of that?
Did it have something to do
because it was flame and that's combustion and internal combustion engine? I don't know. I don't know what the tie-in is there.
I don't get it.
I'm not going anywhere with it.
Totally
something that
lost.
Something that we found earlier and we went,
Whoa.
Other news, the Mueller report to be released Thursday morning.
All right.
On Thursday night's show, we'll be talking sports.
All sports.
All sports. Soccer.
Golf. Yeah.
Golf and soccer we'll be talking about on Thursday night.
The last 3 hours will be nothing but lacrosse. Please tune in. It's going to be memorable.
We'll ask the question on Thursday night show, is soccer and NASCAR actually sports?
No.
Big guy's going to get us in trouble.
But do you remember that was a debate, though?
Oh, yeah.
Is NASCAR a sport? No, it's not. Is golf a sport? No.
Yeah. Hmm. What was the final verdict on what defines a sport? If you can do it while drinking beer? Well, technically, you could drink beer during any game, I guess, right?
Wait a minute. Who was it? If our friend Dale is listening, he would know. Was it Len Dawson who was smoking the cigarette for Kansas City? There's a famous picture.
Yeah, I don't know. Not sure.
Our friend Dale, who listens,
yeah,
all the time. He does the public address announcing at Arrowhead.
Right.
I think it was. I believe it was Len Dawson who was smoking a cigarette while sitting on the sidelines.
Right.
I don't know if he's drinking a beer, but
yeah. I mean, technically, you could, you know, the quarterback could go sit on the bench and drink a beer instead of Gatorade.
A Football Life was on, Joe Namath.
Oh, yeah? Right.
I watched it, and they said that in the huddle, and they were talking about all the players, and he admitted, in the huddle, they could smell the fumes of alcohol from him from the night before. In the huddle. And he'd go...
They only played one game a week, right?
Yes.
It's like you couldn't give that night a break? Wow.
He said when he became captain, though, then he stopped. He started changing his behavior because at that point he had to become a leader.
Well, okay. Fine.
And they covered it all. In the Football Life, they covered it. The same thing with the ESPN reporter. I can't think of her name. They covered that and showed that, and
I want to kiss you.
Yeah, and he talked about it. I mean, he was right up front about that.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any way to be other than right up front, right?
My whole point was, so now we've got football that you can drink beer.
Well, clearly.
What's the definition?
I guess. I watched PBS did, in their Masters series, did a piece on Ted Williams. The greatest hitter in baseball ever.
Yeah.
And it was so fascinating. And someone told him, Bob Costas told him, and Bob Costas says this during the documentary, you know, John Wayne is a pretender. You're the real John Wayne. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically, and Ted Williams goes, yeah, I know. And he goes, because Ted Williams was very blunt. You know, his daughter says, you know, when you're crying, typically someone would say, oh, come over here, give me a hug. When you're crying and Ted Williams is your dad, it's, what in the world are you crying about? Blankety blank. And he loved to curse. Apparently he was masterful at cursing. But I think to myself that time and that era where he decided he was just going to focus on that one thing.
Yeah.
The one thing, and it was just a fascinating documentary. But I think there are plenty of somebody does the charity baseball game where they actually serve beer on second base or something. So if you get to second base, you get a beer.
Yeah, the beer leagues.
Yeah, so you could probably do that in real baseball. Well, I don't think anybody would care.
You know what you know what a sport is? Anything that I can't do. So everything's a sport.
Yeah, pretty much.
Other news, the Mueller report is going to be released. We went over it earlier. I really think that and it was funny because we talked about what we thought and then played Alan Dershowitz, who said almost the exact same thing.
Yeah.
That what you're going to see is on collusion, nothing. but it will be the part where they break down the different, as he said, there's two reports coming out on obstruction of justice, that one from the side of the attorneys who believe that Trump committed obstruction of justice and the other side that believe he did not. And he said, I don't believe you're going to see anything new in there. It's going to be the, everything that we publicly know. They're just going to try to make the case of what isn't obstruction of justice and just say that it is.
Right.
And that would be where he fired Comey. And the fact is you can't make that case, but they're trying to make that case by saying that the law should be expanded to that, or the way that they read the law includes that, which is just ridiculous. You really couldn't, you could never make that case in a court of law before a jury.
No,
you couldn't.
No. It's because the political case is going to be, well, everything that the Democrats want it to be. This whole thing is built on nothing. That's what you have to keep in mind. Whatever happens from, you know, Thursday morning on over the next few days, several days, is going to be much of the same. Building something out of nothing. Something that is not there.
It will be interesting to see the how what they jump on, as I said, what they jump on when, by the time that we come in, what we see they've jumped on all day Thursday, and then what the analysis is a week later.
Yeah.
When you've gone through it, when you've actually gone through it all, which we know the narrative constantly changes on the left. It always, right. The goalposts are always moving.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The aftermath of the active weather system known as Bomb Cyclone 2, yes, included heavy precipitation in much of the nation's midsection. But perhaps the headline grabber was a tornadic outbreak in the deep south over the weekend.
The most expansive round of severe weather occurred Saturday into Saturday night and early Sunday. And during that time period, we saw as many as two dozen tornadoes, still counting them at this time and looking at the damage, mainly from eastern Texas into Alabama.
Plus heavy wind damage in the eastern U.S. into early Monday, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. Now a more expansive, severe, and slow-moving weather outbreak is expected to travel cross-country starting Tuesday.
And it does look quite serious, a slow-moving system with a lot of energy, big temperature contrast, and I'm afraid we're going to be looking at more tornadoes, more hail, and more wind damage during the middle to latter part of the week.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Turn on radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, Cher gets hit by the left.
We knew it.
Yeah. She gets hit by the left because what she stated on sanctuary cities.
Oh, man.
And on illegal immigrants coming into the country could have been written by Donald Trump himself.
She may have to leave the country. She may have to get out.
Isn't she about to tour again?
She does tour. One of the guys that plays guitar for her also plays for Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I follow him on social media. So that's how I know she still tours. Because when he's not touring with other groups, he's often on the road with her. She does, the guitar player for, he's also the guitar player on the Whitesnake. Don't know if he's East Coast or West Coast.
Oh, okay.
I'll find his name here in just a minute.
Well, that's a different style. But then again, Whitesnake to Trans-Siberian to Cher. They're very, very excellent guns for hire, aren't they?
Joel Hoekstra.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. About. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's a brilliant musician.
Oh yeah, he really is. Around fantastic,
and excels on every level. And in a lot of that, I mean, if you think about it, the some of the '80s stuff, especially that she did, you know, had some pretty good guitar riffs in it. And it pays the bills for sure.
Yes.
Here's your forecast.
Many areas of the southern U.S. still cleaning up after a weekend of deadly tornadoes and some flash flooding. Keep that in mind, especially on the back roads of portions of the Deep South. For today, the southern states are under high pressure, and that means clear and sunny conditions as things dry out there. Some spotty showers over Texas today as the result of daytime heating. And we do have the risk of some thunderstorms today from Nebraska into Iowa, northern Illinois, northern Indiana, and southern Michigan. Denver likely to pick up some rain into Wednesday night and then some potential snow flurries into Thursday. For today, we'll see some showers in Salt Lake City. For higher elevations of the Rockies, we'll see snow, lower elevations, all rain. And that situation continues from Idaho into Montana, Wyoming, portions of Nevada, California, Oregon, and Washington. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios. Sports talk all night. Red Eye Radio.
No, it's lacrosse talk all night. Get it straight, you guys.
Imagine somebody. I know somebody. I think it's somebody's ears going, what?
What? Yeah, like one of our many program directors waking up to go get a drink of water. What? What happened? What happened to the red guys? What are the red eye guys? Where did they go? By the way, it might be an improvement. We might be giving false hopes to some of those program directors.
Just exactly. Yeah, good afternoon, sports fans. Biff Barr from the Biff Barr Sports Spot Spotlight, biffing up all the details and barfing them right back at you. I got a partial score here. Philadelphia 6. Ah, yes, the late, great George Carlin there. That got me for a second. I went, sports all night? What's that?
Oh, no, I was thinking, oh, I guess I'm fired now.
It's
time to go. That actually went across my tiny brain for a split second. I guess I can go home now.
Oh, it caught me off guard for a second. I just, sports. Oh.
Yeah.
Just a deep voice guy just being sarcastic, trying to get us in trouble.
Right.
A new national Emerson poll, including 20 Democratic candidates for president, found who is at the top of the pack. Bernie Sanders.
All right.
29%, followed by Joe Biden with 24%. Buttigieg 9, O'Rourke, Kamala Harris 8, Elizabeth Warren 7, Andrew Yang, and Julian Castro were at 3%. The poll was conducted April 11th through the 14th of Democratic primary voters, registered voters, not likely voters, but registered voters.
I saw a very brief preview. It was a montage promo for HBO. I was watching another documentary there, and they had this little montage of, you know, their programming. And they're doing a show. I don't know if it's a one-off or a series. I haven't built enough interest to even look it up, to even Google it, on Beto. I thought, that's interesting. It's called Betting on Beto or something. I don't know what it's called, but it's, you know, They're I guess we're betting on the rise of Beto O'Rourke. But so far in the polls, it hasn't happened.
No, he's roughly at 8. Now, this is interesting because it's very, very small fine print here, and I have my reading glasses. Wish I had adjustable reading glasses where you could, like, really increase.
Really zoom
really
in.
Like, zooming. That's got to be next. Zooming reading glasses.
Reading glasses, yeah.
But it shows Swalwell, 1%. Klobuchar, 1%. I can't even read that name. Gabbard, 1%. Tim Ryan, 1%. John Delaney, 1%. Inslee, 0%. And then the rest, all 0%. Someone else, 2%. So someone else is beating 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the candidates in so far.
So if you're at 1 and nobody has doubled you, I mean, a non-specific person is doubling you in preference.
Someone else, yes.
Is it time to consider whether you're going to, you know, keep going? Has anyone ever gone from 1% to winning?
That would be some interesting research. Has anybody gone from 1% out?
I mean, I know relatively unknowns have gone on and done big things, but that's not what we're talking about.
What did Bill Clinton have? Because we're a year and a half out still.
Yeah.
Now, but I don't think most of the candidates back, even when Clinton was running, were announcing a year and a half out.
No. In fact, I mean, by today's standards, Bill Clinton's announcement would have been late in the game. Right? When did he announce?
Oh, no. I thought he announced late when he first got in.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I said, late.
Well, if he got in now, you said that would be late.
No. By today's standards, he announced late by today's standards.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Right, yes. Because I'd like to, that would be some interesting research to do. But you go back and see who even contended that just had a 1 or 2%. Then again, I don't remember. I mean, we didn't used to have 18, 20 people. What do you have now? Let me see officially. Because everybody's in here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 20. Officially 20 are in. Well, no, not officially.
He announced October 3rd of 91.
Yes. I know.
Well, I mean, go back to 2011, the end of 2011 when it was the, I guess, summer and fall of 2011, when Trump was talking about it. He never announced, he never got in into the 2012 race.
They were through the roof.
He was talking about it.
He was leading.
Right. And he decided not to get in. But that was even kind of late. That was the second half of 2011.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it has changed drastically. I think there's a couple of things to it. I mean, that's what it's become. But beyond that, I think with this particular president, it was the race to announce that I'm taking him on, whoever you are, whichever of the 20 candidates you are, you wanted to get it out, because you know that there is that instant gratification effect that people will be hopeful that one person in that pack will defeat Trump in November of next year. And you know you're going to capitalize on that. You want to do everything you can to take advantage of that, people being eager to get him out of office. So I do wonder, though, if you're at number one, if you're at a 1%, do you really have any hope?
You ready for this now?
Okay.
For the 76 election, this is Democrats, all
okay.
right? These are polls that were conducted, the average of polls, January through June of 1975.
Okay.
Who was leading?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
George Wallace.
Okay.
The polling average for Jimmy Carter, who ended up winning, was 1%. 530, I went 538.com. It goes through the history of polling. Wow. So, that's fascinating. And Bill Clinton, the average polling January through June of 1991, even though he didn't officially get in until October, they still were polling all of them because he was a possibility, 1.7%. So, and his name recognition was only 30% back then.
Yeah, so New York Times, it is 538, so it's the same one, but New York Times carried it. So, Mario Cuomo.
In 92?
In the 92 Democratic primary field, and these would be the average of polls conducted in January to June of 91.
Yes.
Well, that explains it because Clinton didn't announce until October.
Right. Right.
So,
but it was viewed that he still might be going in it. But
yeah.
And his name recognition was only 30%.
Well, and Cuomo was by then that was already that he was a known quantity. I mean, he was a household name. So, right. But ultimately, Al Gore was at 9.7 on the average. Lloyd Benson, Jesse Jackson, Dick Gephardt, George McGovern, Sam Nunn, Bill Bradley, and Richards.
Can I ask this question? Hmm. Is the reason if, and again, I'm not going to go by just the Emerson poll, because it right now it's an outlier. But if polls start coming in over the next week that show Biden, you know, is that Sanders takes the lead, is that because Biden won't announce or hasn't announced? And people are like, okay, we say that the primaries are too long, but might there be a tired factor already, say, an exhaustion factor with Biden saying, look, if you're not going to run, then step out?
I think Bernie gets a boost by his group and others, you know, his core, but also others, when he announced that whole Medicare for all, because nobody wants to do the math. All they want to hear is,
right,
oh, I'm getting, well, you know, free.
Here's
stuff.
My question.
He's promoting free stuff. I think he gets a bit of a bump from that. Once you start tearing that idea down, I think it goes back to where it was.
Does Biden get a bump if he decides to run?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Well, depending on the timing,
Normally I would say yes. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm sitting here asking you the questions is I honestly can't read what's going on.
Well, I don't know how
I can't read what's going on right now.
It could be in today's news cycle, though. It could be a bump for a weekend and, you know, one polling cycle and then be back to normal it could also go in the opposite direction. He could be at the top of the heap now and then all of a sudden, you know, he's nowhere.
I think Bernie gets a bump from being on Fox News.
Yeah, I think he gets it from that and his Medicare, you know, for all,
right,
that he re-announced.
I think the headlines, and I was reading some of the headlines to you earlier off the air that were saying, Bernie destroys Fox.
Right.
He embarrasses them.
Right.
The Fox News audience cheers for Bernie's Medicare. Now, is that a deceptive headline? Of course it is.
Hmm.
Because, yes, it is technically a Fox News audience because they're in there, but it is not actually a Fox News audience. They're not actually the P1, you know, the major viewers of Fox News. You had a ton of Bernie Sanders fans. And so the headline is deceiving, stating that, trying to make the case, implying that, well, Fox News audience was changed because Bernie was there. All of a sudden, they were loyal Republicans who heard what Bernie had to say and said, wow, this guy is something. We want Medicare for all. When that really isn't the case.
No.
So, there you go. So, interesting.
Well, and I think it's different, too, because of what is available to us, as opposed to a 1992 with a Bill Clinton. You know, it was still then was only about what you would get on the evening news and CNN. Because CNN was the only real, I mean, if you think about, you know, being established because of the first Gulf War, they had established an audience. While it wasn't huge, you would get it from the newspapers, from the evening news, and from CNN. Otherwise, there was no communication effectively with people. There were no cell phones that people, you know, you had mobile phones, but most people didn't have one.
No, they didn't.
And so the communication level was much, much different.
I had a beeper.
Pager. Yeah, right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Front End Radio, he's Eric Hurley, I'm Gary McNamara. And finally, yesterday, Lori Loughlin and her husband pleaded not guilty, the actress in the college admissions case.
All right, so what is it that her attorney thinks, or is she going against the advice of her attorney, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not sure why they would fight it. It seems like it, according to the reports, that's a pretty solid case.
I know.
Wow. Oh, well. Guess we'll follow along.
Guilty can face years in prison.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.